Hello again, I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, January the 10th. Welcoming in an environmental journalist this hour and author of the book High Tech Trash, Digital Devices, Hidden Toxics, and Human Health. These high-tech gadgets may be sleek, but our guest says they are not green. She says from the lab to the dump, the manufacture and disposal of electronics generates an astonishing level of toxic materials, and the 5 to 7 million tons of high-tech stuff that Americans alone discard each year make up much of the heavy metals found in U.S. landfills, and the problem extends beyond our borders. We will welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, wondering if you are concerned about e-waste. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Elizabeth Grossman. She's an environmental journalist and author of High Tech Trash, Digital Devices, Hidden Toxics, and Human Health. She joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
What sparked your interest in this topic?
Well, it was actually local water quality issues. I live in Portland, Oregon, and the river that flows through the city of Portland, and it's actually just about 2 to 3 blocks walk from my front door, is the Willamette River. And back in 2000, I was doing some research into water quality in the Willamette, looking at what industry was actually allowed by state and federal government to discharge as industrial waste into the river. And what I learned using data that's publicly available from the Environmental Protection Agency was that at that point, the majority of that pollution was coming from high-tech and related industries. The traditional industries here in the Willamette Valley, sort of not unlike sort of older industries in Wisconsin, the upper Midwest, had been pulp and paper. And those industries were still contributing a fair amount of contamination to the river. But this new industry, which has been welcomed in communities all over the place under the banner of sort of clean industry, high-tech, chip manufacturing, silicon wafer manufacturing, and some companies that make some special metals products for high-tech, were actually contributing the majority of the contamination
to the
river.
That is surprising, because you think of it as a seemingly clean industry, but for instance, just manufacturing a chip can manufacture what else?
Well, there's a lot. It's a very complex process making something that, and it's one of the things that really struck me about all of this is that semiconductors, microchips, silicon wafers, they're actually rather small things, but they're very, very complicated, and their manufacturing process involves dozens, even hundreds of different steps, and each one of those steps, there's different industrial waste byproducts, and so there are solvents, there are metals, there are all sorts of chemicals that get used in these processes, and a lot of them end up in the wastewater.
Yeah, and then they also are what in our computers, in our den, and in our cell phones, and everything else that we have.
Yeah.
And then what happens with all that stuff? Like I mentioned in the introduction, I actually all of my high tech trash is in a closet or a drawer right now.
Well, that was one of the phrases that I heard when I was working on this book that I don't know actually rather amused me, and I actually heard this from a sort of solid waste and recycling specialist that in fact there is so much old computer equipment stored, particularly in Americans' basements and garages and attics, that they call it closet fill.
Oh, no. So
and
I'm not alone, I thought.
No. Yeah. I mean, in fact, that's apparently where an awful lot of the individual households' old electronics are. But when you think about the bulk of this stuff and the fact that Americans own, about 2 billion pieces of high-tech consumer electronics, which includes over 200 million televisions and over 200 million computers and about that many cell phones, and how quickly we turn these things over, we're generating a huge amount of this waste, and a lot of it is still going to landfills. Some of it goes to recycling. Some of it, as you mentioned, does end up being sent overseas for inexpensive, often unsafe dismantling and materials recovery.
Now, what evidence is there that this is resulting in contaminated landfills and contaminated water?
Well, it's very well documented that some of the major components of electronics, particularly the big old desktop monitors, those big boxy things that are on so many office desks, and which is very similar to a big TV monitor, not a flat panel screen, but the ones with the curved glass screens, those units have quite a lot of lead in them. There are other heavy metals. There's cadmium, there's barium, there's phosphorus, there's a lot of copper. Copper's not inherently toxic, but the lead is a huge problem. And there are indeed scientists and labs, various places that have tested this equipment to verify the fact that when it is ground up, it releases seriously hazardous amounts of lead and other heavy metals.
Yeah, and that's the landfills here. We touched on the problem overseas. What is the greatest concern of that?
Well, the greatest concern there is that unlike landfills here, and unlike recycling, electronics recycling in this country, a lot of the recycling that happens in countries like China, in India, other places in South and Southeast Asia, this work is done under sort of appallingly primitive conditions. I've seen films and photographs and talked to people who've visited who have seen people simply banging this stuff apart with hammers, melting down the plastics over open flames, not wearing any protective equipment so that they can get at the valuable metal that can be reused. And enormous amounts of this equipment is just dumped in uncontained landfills. There are places outside of Lagos, Nigeria, where this stuff is just simply dumped in uncontained landfills. And when they fill up, they're burned. And particularly the plastics, when they burn, they release really serious toxic materials, including dioxins, which are known to be carcinogenic. The stuff gets in the atmosphere and it blows all around, so it's not good for anyone anywhere.
Yeah. So, what is the answer?
Well, the answer is, there are two major parts to that question. One is to begin designing equipment that contain fewer toxic materials to begin with, so you have less of a waste problem on the other end. Some of that work is already underway. And the other part of the answer is to deal with this equipment properly, make sure it goes to responsible recycling so that if the equipment can be used for parts, can be refurbished so somebody else can use a piece of equipment, that happens. And if not, the equipment is taken apart so that the glass, the plastic, the metals can be reused.
We're talking with Elizabeth Grossman. She is the author of the book High Tech Trash, Digital Devices, Hidden Toxics, and Human Health, talking about all of the pollution caused by a seemingly clean industry, the high tech industry, and how these high tech gizmos may be sleek, but they are not green, according to our guest. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. We wonder if this is something you think about when you're buying that latest iPod or cell phone. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon between 4 and 6 for At Issue. President Bush addresses the nation tonight with a new strategy for Iraq. Ben's guest after 4 will explain why the so-called surge of U.S. troops in Iraq is not a good idea. We will be carrying that address by President Bush tonight at 8 o'clock. You can hear it here on the Ideas Network. And we will also be talking with different guests from different perspectives all morning long, tomorrow morning between 6 and 9. Different guests talking with you about the president's new plan for Iraq. We're talking about high-tech trash this hour with Elizabeth Grossman. She is an environmental journalist and author of the book High-Tech Trash, and we welcome your thoughts and questions for her at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Before we go to the phones, Elizabeth Grossman, how pervasive is this problem? Is this a problem with every computer or every cell phone, every high-tech gadget that's manufactured? Or are there some that are worse than others?
Well, most equipment is it's pretty similar. So yes, the waste issues are I would say the same, essentially the same for all equipment. There are a lot of improvements that have recently started to be made in equipment. Prompted by some new regulations in Europe, which have said, for instance, that equipment that's made or sold beginning this year, or actually last year, 2006, cannot use lead solder in it. Some other hazardous materials, chromium, cadmium, certain flame retardants, certain uses of mercury have also been restricted. And that means that because high-tech is such a global international market, that virtually all equipment made by major manufacturers is going to meet these standards because it's just not economically feasible for a company, say, like Dell or IBM or HP or Apple to make a piece of equipment that you could sell in Paris, but you couldn't sell it in Madison. So the equipment is going to be improving, but most of the equipment that people are now getting rid of has large amounts of lots of different toxic materials in it. So essentially, whatever you have, don't put it in the trash. Make sure it gets disposed of properly.
Yeah, and how does it get disposed of properly?
Well, that is the big gap in this country. Along with the requirements that I just mentioned about materials in Europe, electronics recycling is now required in Europe. Virtually anything with a plug that runs on electricity, you must recycle it in Europe. And they've set up a system that will make this relatively convenient and not cost anything for consumers. But in this country, there is no national system or requirement for electronics recycling. A handful of states and some other local governments have now passed either bans on putting electronics in landfills or starting to set up required recycling programs. But in most states, including Wisconsin for individuals, you know, unless your conscience says I should find a recycler or make sure this gets taken care of properly, you can put it in the trash.
Is there anything a consumer can do about this?
Absolutely. Well, I said, you know, you actually have to think pretty hard about what you're going to do because there's a big gap in education. But all of the big manufacturers now have some kind of recycling and take-back program. You can go on their website, sort of do a search that says something like HP or Dell recycling, and you will get to a website that will tell you how to get your equipment back to the manufacturer. It may take some time, it may very likely cost you something. They may want you to buy a new piece of equipment to take advantage of the program. But I like the idea of getting a piece of used equipment back to its manufacturer because, to me, that helps say, well, if you as a manufacturer have to be responsible for a piece of equipment at the end of its useful life, presumably that will give the manufacturer some incentive to design products that are easier to dispose of, easier to recycle, and therefore contain less hazardous materials. There are also hundreds of private recyclers out there, and the tricky thing about choosing one is to make sure you're going to find one that's going to handle the materials responsibly and not be sending them particularly overseas for cheap, unsafe processing.
Yeah. Let's take some calls. Peter in Milwaukee is first. Hi, Peter.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was wondering, we have so many batteries in the electronic gadgets, and even my grandchildren's AA, AAA batteries and all their toys. Where do we go with all of that?
Batteries are a huge headache. I have actually a little pile of alkali batteries that I'm supposed to be taking to a hazardous waste site myself.
Yeah.
The rechargeable batteries that are in, say, cell phones and things like that, those are actually, for some reason, easier to recycle. There are a lot of the manufacturers, places like Radio Shack, will take them back. But again, this stuff varies from community to community. There's information you can get if, I think it's called the rechargeable, if you just do a little Google search for battery recycling, you should probably, through the Wisconsin DNR, be able to get some solutions. But I wish we did in this country what is being done in Europe. I was in Sweden a year or so ago, and at the hotel I stayed, and there was a little bin for battery recycling next to one for newspapers.
Yeah, what a good idea. I have to admit that I know that I have tossed those in the trash, and we really shouldn't.
No, and I wish there was an easy solution, but I'm sure through Wisconsin DNR you mm-hmm. could find some local solutions, but then you have to, you know, actually take them where they need to go.
Yeah, and it is, throwing away a AA battery is toxic for our environment?
Well, I mean, it's a tiny thing, so it's not going to emit huge amounts of toxics, but then you have to look at the cumulative effect of these things. And, you know, just having those metals and the chemicals are not really good for landfills. And right now it's 20 after 6 in Portland, Oregon, and I can't remember the exact constituents of a AAA battery. But one of the things that is motivating electronics recycling, and, I mean, it's not, batteries don't have all the same components in them, but most of the metal that is in electronics equipment is completely reusable. All of that copper, the little tiny bits of gold and other precious metals, that stuff's essentially 100% recyclable, those metals industry told me. So aside from any kind of hazards, it's just a huge waste of resources. And there's a lot of material in all of this stuff that could simply be reused. And everybody I spoke to really said that if you can reuse those resources, you know, you'll be eventually reducing the footprint of extracting those resources.
Well, we appreciate you getting up early for us, too. I forgot you're on the West Coast. Don in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, this is an important issue, and it's what I call externalized cost, because when you manufacture something, you don't calculate the cost of disposing or recycling it. For example, I had a small laptop refurbished. It cost about $700 for a motherboard and $150 for a new battery. When I bought it, it was $1,200, and not $1,200 plus $700 plus $150. And I presume that the real cost to a manufacturer recycling that particular laptop would have been something like $400. So what I bought for $11 should have really been something like $1,500. And the same thing is true, as you mentioned, for batteries, boom boxes. They tell me that these hybrid cars are especially difficult because they're hard to recycle. We're not really paying the cost now of recycling that stuff, and we really ought to have ordinances and laws mandating this sort of thing. That's my comment today.
Yeah, what about that?
Yeah, the comment the caller made about the external costs not being incorporated into the initial cost of the equipment is a really important sort of principle in thinking about all of this. And I think that's one of the reasons we've had this impression that this equipment was clean and green and didn't have material impacts because it processes information, something that's really ephemeral, and I'm constantly amazed that I can just, you know, with a few clicks on my keyboard, I can just access all sorts of stuff. And, you know, a lot of times you don't actually fork over any money to read that article or watch that video clip or read that document. So you have this idea that there's no cost attached to this, but actually the huge amount of materials that go into this equipment at the beginning of the life cycle and at the end of it are indeed costs. And, I mean, that's something really important to start thinking about and will indeed prompt greater reuse. And the other point the caller made about trying to refurbish equipment, make it last longer, I think that's really one of the naughtiest parts of this equation, because with the best will in the world, you keep like, well, I wish I could keep a computer for 10 years, but it just doesn't seem to last that long. And then you have to go out and buy all these new parts and, you know, peripheral pieces of equipment, so that if there was a way to make things last longer, we'd be just using less stuff, less resources, and have less impacts overall.
Yeah. I'm, of all things, a newspaper article yesterday in our Milwaukee Journal Sentinel was on people who will look for refurbished computers instead of buying a new one because they are concerned about the environmental effects of the, you know, of tossing them.
Yeah, and I mean, that if that works for you, that's a really good option. And in fact, a lot of the major, larger recycling companies, electronics recycling companies, when they get equipment in, that's the first thing they actually do. They separate out the equipment that is working, can be refurbished, can be reused, and get it back into shape so that it can be resold and reused. So that's a really important part of the equation. I mean, it doesn't always work. A lot of stuff is too old or too unreliable, but there are shops that actually will take things apart for parts. There's one here in Portland, Oregon called Free Geek, and I think there are others like it around the country where they take old equipment and rebuild new things from the parts that work.
Yeah, it's interesting because this person profiled here works for a small environmental group, and he wanted to buy a computer that would be easy on the ecosystem, and he had kind of a hard time finding what he needed, but he found it.
Yeah, and yeah, it's a lot of choices to be made.
Yeah. We are talking with Elizabeth Grossman, High Tech Trash, author of High Tech Trash, Digital Devices, Hidden Toxics, and Human Health, talking about e-waste and the pollution caused by the manufacture and disposal of all the high-tech gizmos that are proliferating. 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your thoughts and questions about this. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Do you think about this when you're shopping for a computer or any other high-tech gadget? Do you recycle your high-tech gadgets? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Barbara in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks so much for this program. This isn't exactly high-tech merchandise I'm talking about, but it's the compact fluorescent light bulbs with huge conglomerate manufacturers offering rebates so that we can get this type of item and save energy. However, the recycling for them is very limited, and the corporations aren't taking any responsibility. They have a website listed on the back of the package for recycling, and then also a phone number. Not having a computer, I called the phone number. They referred me to the website. And the website, which, you know, well, as soon as I get to the library, that'll be great. And then when I said, well, gee, if you have a computer there, do you think you could check that website for me? And all the website does is tell you, check your local municipality. Well, I have a phone book. I could have done that, before calling them. It was absolutely no help. And I said, well, don't worry about it because only three states mandate recycling of that product. It contains such a small amount of mercury. Yes, but if you're encouraging everyone to use it because it saves energy, if you're offering rebates on it, by sheer volume, eventually this will be a huge problem. And what can we do to pressure these corporations to get serious? The battery manufacturing companies have set up recycling and took that upon themselves. What about these, and as you're talking, the computer manufacturers have systems in place, but there are things all down the line. What's the best way for a consumer to go about pressuring these companies? And if it has to be built into the price, I'm one of the people who's willing to pay it.
Yeah. Twisting some corporate arms. Elizabeth Grossman?
Well, the point you're making about the complex solutions is a really good one. They actually are recyclable. There are companies that do it. I really wish, and I don't know if there's a location convenient to you, just offhand. I'm not promoting them, but I just happen to know that there's a company called Earth Protection Services that specializes in fluorescent lamps. You might want to see if they have an outlet near you, but then you do have to bring it to them. I think one of the best things you could do would be to contact your state representatives, your state legislator or senator, and say that you really are interested in using these bulbs. You are using them, but there really needs to be a convenient way to recycle them. And I know that the Wisconsin State Legislature is probably going to be considering some regulations for e-waste that would involve the producers of the equipment, involve the manufacturers in recycling. So I would think your elected officials may very well be responsive to similar concerns about compact fluorescents. And I have the same issues about them here. My local hardware store will offer to put them in the trash. And I say, no, don't do that. Persevere with your phone book, but while you're on the phone, maybe make a call to your state reps and say, hey, I want to use these bulbs, but we need to have a convenient way to recycle them, and I think that would help put some pressure on.
Thank you, Barbara, for the call. Tom in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Tom.
Hi. My question is kind of in follow-up to these issues of real costs and externalizing costs. Is there any computer companies out there that are actually producing a computer that, takes into account issues of sustainability and, creating a green product that we can actually go out and support these companies today by buying their equipment?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, those regulations from Europe that have called for restricting certain hazardous substances in electronics, virtually all the major manufacturers are meeting those standards. A number of companies are also, they're all constantly looking at the science on various hazardous materials and trying to stay ahead of the regulatory curve, ahead of the regulations. And a couple of times people have asked me, which is the greenest, best electronics manufacturer? And I have a very hard time answering that because essentially a lot of companies are doing very similar things, all the major companies. Greenpeace and the Computer Take Back campaign have both recently issued kind of report cards on major electronic manufacturers, and they've rated them according to sort of materials changes, design changes, the facility with which one can use the take back programs, and you might want to look at those and make some choices based on that, but there are a lot of criteria that go into them, and essentially, a lot of the companies are fairly similar on major pieces of equipment. So it's kind of hard to say, at least for me, to say one company is absolutely the best one because you may have some issues with some other practices they have. So I would suggest taking a look at the Computer Take Back campaign report card and also maybe Greenpeace's report card and making some decisions based on that.
Thanks a lot, Tom, for the call. And Elizabeth, we're getting lots of calls from people who want to know about, you know, where to recycle this, that, or the other thing. And so Leo Duran, my producer, has been doing a little bit of research.
Okay.
And he did mention that stores like Radio Shack and Staples will collect your nickel cadmium
right.
and rechargeable batteries. He did say that the University of Wisconsin, of all things, apparently has advice that it's okay to throw away alkaline batteries if that's what you want to do. But as an alternative, there's a company called Big Green Box. Have you ever heard of that?
Vaguely, but I'm not really familiar with them.
Which will recycle whatever you send them in a box, provided you know pay shipping and all that other.
And one other resource, I mean, there are tons of resources out there. A couple of other resources I would suggest, and with deference to your caller, without access to computer, unfortunately, computer is the best way to check these things these days. There's an organization based in Seattle called the Basel, B-A-S-E-L, Action Network, which has on their website a list of computer recyclers, electronics recyclers, listed by geography, who have pledged not to export equipment for unsafe recycling and not to use prison labor and various other criteria. And if you're looking for a responsible recycler, that's a good resource. There's also an organization based in San Francisco called CompuMentor, and they have a big resource attached to their site that's called TechSoup, I believe, and that has a huge listing of both recyclers and reuse organizations. And then another one is eBay has a program called Rethink, which is also a very good resource for what to do with old computers, where to send them locally, and that might be helpful as well.
Elizabeth Grossman is an environmental journalist, author and journalist based in Portland, Oregon. She is the author of the book High Tech Trash, Digital Devices, Hidden Toxics, and Human Health, talking about the problems with e-waste. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned for Kathleen Dunn coming up after 9 o'clock. The 110th Congress is in its first 100 hours, and Kathleen and her guest will talk about what's on the Democrats' agenda and what's being accomplished and still to be accomplished. She'll have two different guests, a Republican-leaning guest and a Democratic-leaning guest, coming up after 9 o'clock. Our next caller on high-tech waste is John in Sheboygan. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. I just noticed the auto industry is making a move toward electric vehicles, not just hybrids, but also electrics, and those are just battery-powered, and there's going to be a lot of battery waste from that because they usually only have a life of 2 to 5 years, and they have to be swapped out after that. So I was wondering what we're going to do about all of those batteries, if they're more recyclable than the lead-acid ones, because they're some kind of ion battery. I just really wasn't sure.
Electric car batteries, Elizabeth Grossman?
I have to confess that is something I haven't researched, but I would guess, given the way the auto industry is working, that there will be some provision for recycling those, sort of similar to the way that there is for other parts of cars.
Yeah. Thanks, John. Rob in Black River Falls. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Great program. I just went through cleaning my closets out along with my mother's of old electronic equipment, and our first stop was Goodwill or Salvation Army, and, oh, they turned us away. I was very surprised. So before anybody tries to drop their stuff off there, just be aware of that. But what it did lead me to was several companies, at least in Madison. I'm in Black River Falls, but I know there is a couple in Madison. They'll take anything, and I don't know what they do with it afterwards. You mentioned prison labor or stuff like that. I wasn't aware of that sort of thing. But the place I use, there's a great place in Eau Claire, and they'll take anything. And they assured me with the computer itself, it gets drilled out, you know, so any personal information is destroyed and then they piece it out. They take the copper, all the heavy metals, they recycle it. And there is a fee, but I loaded my pickup truck up, and frankly, it was about $60. So, it's before someone spends $700 on, well, that actually would be preferable to recycle the computer or to reuse it, but I just want people to know that there are local companies out there. You just got to kind of look for them.
Yeah. We're not here to advertise necessarily, but what is sure. This Eau Claire company? That's all right.
You know what? It's been a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
They're right in town. They're in the phone book, I know. But the way I found them in Black River, I called my local government, the city, the town, and they wouldn't take it. They referred me to someplace in Holman, way out by the river, big river there. And I called them, and they said, well, if you don't want to come out here, there's a great place in Tomah. So I called the place in Tomah. They didn't take some of the stuff that I had. And he says, hey, try this other place in Eau Claire.
So wow, it was quite a process for you to get this done.
Yeah, but it was very satisfying in the end. Their prices are determined by the market. So, for instance, my monitors ended up costing about $15 or $20 each, but then old cell phones are free. So, again, the prices vary from $0 to $20.
Yeah, well, good for you, Robin. Thanks for that information.
Again, I just wanted to pass that along to you. So, great program again. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Elizabeth Grossman?
I think the story your caller just told is pretty typical. And that's sort of one of the problems, that it's actually a lot harder than you think to deal with this stuff properly. He initially mentioned Goodwill and Salvation Army turning away the old equipment. I'm not familiar with what Salvation Army does. And Goodwill varies from place to place. I don't know what it's doing specifically in Wisconsin, but if you're in Goodwill in, say, Austin, Texas, they have a very active computer refurbishing and recycling program, but obviously they don't have that capacity everywhere. And one of the tricky things about finding a recycler is that currently there isn't any consistent either like government-run or other independent third-party program that sticks a good housekeeping seal of approval on a recycler to say that, hey, these guys are acting responsibly, they're not shipping stuff overseas, which is why I suggested some of those other resources. I know the EPA is working on getting some standards together, but they don't exist yet. And also because of sort of that lengthy journey, even though it's probably going to cost you some money because it does cost to take the stuff apart, that's why I kind of like, if you can, use the manufacturer's programs sometimes, because at least that might be one phone call instead of three, four, or five. But again, they're not going to be taking old TVs or old stereo equipment, and you're going to have to do one of those research journeys to get that stuff taken care of, unfortunately.
Rob, thanks very much. Steve in Burlington, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
The last caller, I have to agree with him that there are places that to go. It's really hard to find in our area. I'm from Burlington, Wisconsin, and I work for one of those companies. It's not Salvation Army or Goodwill, but we try to help the community. Through the donations we receive, we convert it into cash. Well, the computers we get sometimes, and the TVs and the stereos, for that stuff just to get thrown away, I don't know. To me, it's frustrating to just know that it's going to be dumped into a landfill and it's going to be poisoning the environment. I try to use Craigslist and see if I can get rid of some of it that way, but I can't tell you how many times I've loaded up my van, driven to Milwaukee to turn it over to even not even cash, but somebody that's going to work on the computers, and then they're not there, and then I've got to come back, and all the gas that's the expense of the gas, it's just a little frustrating. But I agree that there does have to be something that we have to do to find a solution to this.
Yeah, and Elizabeth Grossman, anything more on that
solution? Well, I was just sort of listening to these stories, and I mean, in the system that's being set up in Europe and the system that's in place in Japan, part of this is convenience. And in Europe, the system allows consumers to take equipment back to retailers and use that as collection points. They're also conveniently located municipal collection points. In Japan, post offices are used as electronics collection points. So So the idea is to make it convenient so no one ever has to travel very far. And it's not as if you're getting rid of this stuff every day of the week. It's once every several years, probably. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that we're mostly talking about individually owned consumer electronics. Large businesses are now starting to ask the manufacturers that they buy equipment from to include the take-back and recycling and secure data destruction sort of as part of the service when they buy the equipment. They're also the large businesses contracting with private recyclers to make sure equipment is taken care of properly. So, I mean, big businesses have a lot more resources to spend on this, obviously, than individuals do, but that's another one of the part of the gaps in what we have going on. And, I mean, I think it'll be really interesting to see as more and more states set up programs and to see if then we'll end up with some kind of federal program as well.
Yeah. You know, Elizabeth Grossman, we're talking a lot about the disposal of this stuff, but if there are heavy metals in this stuff, is it causing us any harm just having that computer sitting on our desk?
Well, I mean, I'm glad you asked that because I think it's important to know that while equipment is intact, being used properly, it's not damaged or broken or anything like that, the heavy metals are not going to jump out and harm you. The lead that's in a computer monitor screen, little bits of mercury that are lighting the flat panel display screen on a laptop or other kind of device, that stuff is not going to jump out and harm you. It's only when the equipment is broken that stuff gets into the environment. The one set of materials that does seem to be migrating out of intact equipment are certain flame retardants, particularly ones that involve bromine, called brominated flame retardants, and they do get out of the equipment. That stuff's also used in a lot of other plastics and in upholstery, and that stuff is kind of traveling around with household dust. But those heavy metals are not going to harm you, and manufacturers are also gradually taking those brominated flame retardants out of equipment and hopefully switching to less toxic chemicals in
good
place.
Good. Carolyn O'Connell-Walk, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a question. I'm just wondering if your speaker could comment on the economy of the accessories and parts that go with these electronics. It seems like that's big business for the retailers. Every time I get a phone or a CD player or whatever, they don't really come with interchangeable parts. For an example, every Motorola phone has a different attachment. Every model number takes a different case, a different car charger. And I have junk drawers just filled with old parts and accessories, and it's because they need to make those aftermarket sales on those parts because that's those companies' big revenue.
Mm-hmm. What about that, Elizabeth Grossman?
Well, I'm not an expert on the economics of that.
But it's wasteful, isn't it?
It is wasteful, and most companies now have something that's called a Design for the Environment program, trying to use less resources, make things less hazardous, use less toxic materials. And to me, one part of that program should be, if it isn't already, to make more things interchangeable and make it so you don't have to get a whole new set of external gizmos every time you buy something new. And I think, I don't know about the cell phones because, I mean, I wish that was true, but I just know, I just inquired about a new laptop because mine seems to be about to die. And I mean, it's not a huge improvement, but I discovered that at least with the next generation, I can still use the same cables to attach my printer and modem with the new generation as I can with this, and that wasn't true on the last generation because they kept changing all those plugs. So that whole idea of, you know, even the equipment that has gone so that you have one printer, fax machine, scanner instead of three different pieces of equipment. I mean, those are sort of baby steps, but it does move things in that direction. So that's a really big and valid point, and it would be wonderful if you only needed one plug instead of half a dozen.
Thanks, Carol, for the call. We were losing you on that cell phone. Steve in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I hesitate to say this, but I believe that government needs to require more recycling because otherwise I just don't think it's going to happen. In industries like the paper industry, I've got an 80-year-old uncle who was instrumental in cleaning up a river in Michigan. I've got a brother who's works in the paper industry. He says recycled paper isn't generally accepted by consumers. But I think recycling is a matter of national security at some point.
Yeah. And the government should take a more active role in this, Elizabeth Grossman?
Well, I think that I would have to agree with your caller that unless some recycling is mandatory, there are some bans on what you can put in a landfill or a municipal incinerator, somebody is going to do it. Unless you've got a ban on dumping, there will always be somebody who will put something in the sort of cheap and dirty, you know, option. So that something needs to be required so that you can get some uniform systems in place so that this stuff is convenient and you've got a safety net against the worst kind of things happening at the very least.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Jenna in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I work for a nonprofit organization in Wisconsin, WasteCap Wisconsin, that helps businesses with waste reduction and recycling. And one of our target areas is electronics. So I can give some answers to some of the questions that some of the callers had. So, for example, on regulations, right now in Wisconsin, the computers, all electronics, the businesses have to comply with hazardous waste regulations, and there are enough hazardous wastes in computers to tip the, it's called the P-click test, and so in fact, businesses are not allowed to landfill electronics in Wisconsin. Now, on the municipal side, which most people are calling about, we just finished a report through the, there was a governor's task force on waste material recovery and disposal, which supported these Midwest efforts to, fact, encourage manufacturer responsibility and to eventually ban consumer electronics.
I'm so sorry, Jenna. We're almost out of time. Do you have a website or something if people want more information?
Yeah, sure. WasteCapWI.org. They can check that out for marks on a variety.
Yeah, we're losing you on the cell phone, too. Say that once again.
WasteCap, WasteCapWI.org.
Yeah.
They can find markets for recyclable materials.
Thank you so much for calling, and I'm sorry we didn't have a lot of time. Some final words from you, Elizabeth Grossman, on where this problem is going.
Well, one, don't put the stuff in the trash. Work with your local government and take advantage of manufacturers' recycling programs and, you know, just make sure that you and your workplace are handling this material responsibly. And I think that, you know, is a first step towards making sure we don't compound these problems.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Grossman is author of the book High Tech Trash, Digital Devices, Hidden Toxics, and Human Health. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing the hour and to Leo Duran for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.